Welcome back to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is your host for the hour, Danny Nezvedarani. And as we sit here, as I speak, there's currently a protest happening outside of Vancouver General Hospital, a picket line happening outside of Vancouver General Hospital on behalf of the BC Nurses Union. It began this morning at 5:30 a.m. Due to negotiations with the employer getting to a point where, you know, a decision was ultimately not able to be made. BCNU CEO Jim Gould said that the provincial government must come back to the table with an offer that respects nurses and recognizes their values in our healthcare system. This government is not going to solve the nursing shortage without making serious improvements to nurses' working conditions. The union will also not tolerate any attempts by the employer to threaten or intimidate our members who are participating in lawful job action. This is a pretty historic picket line, considering the fact that this current job action followed a historic strike vote in which 50,850 nurses participated, with 98.2% voting in favor of job action. We were actually able to attend earlier this morning, and the scenes were pretty energetic, to say the least. Lots of people honking in support. Lots of people on the picket line cheering and holding their signs, critiquing the employer, as well as just expressing their demands for better working conditions. We were also able to later on speak with the BC Nurses Union president, Adrienne Geer. Here is a recording of that interview. It also included other media as well as sort of a scrum, but the questions that I asked are picked up through the audio that I recorded.
Today is the first day that we are escalating our job action to actually withdrawing labor. It's unfortunate, but this is where we're at. Nurses in this province can no longer hold the system together. My members rejected a tentative agreement. They made it very clear that the agreement does not address our working conditions, which includes very heavy workloads. There's simply not enough nurses. It includes violence. It includes not having enough support for nurses. And so here we are. And it's unfortunate, but nurses in this province are taking this step.
How long have you all been out here today so far?
Well, the line went up at 5:30 this morning, and that was in time to catch sort of the day shift, which for the most part turns over at 7 a.m.
Okay. And how long do you expect this to go on?
Well, we will continue with job action until we're able to secure an agreement on behalf of our members. Members rejected the tentative agreement we did reach by 67%. And so, you know, we did have some conversations yesterday with the employer, but they continue to maintain the position that they are not able to negotiate outside of the mandate that the government has sort of imposed. And so until we see some movement, I think, unfortunately, we are going to continue to see different forms of job action, including withdrawing labor.
Are nurse-to-patient ratios part of the ask that the union is bringing forward?
So I really appreciate the question. In terms of minimum nurse-to-patient ratios, It's a policy that we negotiated last round of collective bargaining directly with government. It's a good policy. We know where we have managed to implement ratios. It is having significant impact. The challenge is we are at least 4,500 nurses short in this province, and the employers, the health employers, have failed to provide working conditions and a competitive contract that will, in fact, recruit and retain nurses to this province. And so while we have a great policy, it's very difficult to actually implement it under the current conditions. We need a strategy to retain and recruit nurses to this province. Government's own labor outlook forecasting, which doesn't necessarily account for ratios, indicates that this province needs to hire about an additional 30 to 35,000 nurses over the next 10 years. And when we're already 4,500 nurses short, there's so much need, and steps need to be taken to address the working conditions and some of the issues in our profession, such as violence, in order for us to successfully retain and recruit nurses.
Lots of honking. So what's the reception been like?
Well, I think the public is with us for the most part. I mean, nurses don't want to be here. We want to be caring for our patients. That's why we went into this profession. I think people that are using the healthcare system, they see it every day, though. They see it when they come to the emergency rooms, or when they're admitted into hospital, or patients that are receiving care in communities, and those care visits end up being deferred because there's not enough nurses. Or the residents in long-term care, there's not enough staff there either. So I think the general public that interfaces with healthcare, they get it. They get it. And for the most part, I believe they're standing with us.
Mm-hmm. One last question on my end. When can the union expect to be back at the bargaining table and discussing with the employer?
So we were at the table very late last evening, again, meeting with the health employers. However, you know, although there was some very productive conversation, they've made it clear without government, the parties can only bargain within the mandate set by government. So what we need is government to show some leadership and insert themselves and help us find a path forward.
Once again, that was Adrian Geer, the president of the BC Nurses Union, speaking outside of the picket line happening at Vancouver General Hospital this very morning. They're still there, and it'll be seen for how long they shall be there. We will obviously continue to update this story as it is one that is ongoing, and we will let you know more of the information as soon as we have it. All right. Thank you all so much again for tuning in to Speak Up this hour. We have about 20 minutes left. Let's play another news piece coming out of BC, this one from Nanaimo, and fellow LJI journalist Lauren McKenzie of CHLY. This one is a story about residents who are worried about what might happen to a hidden wetland in Nanaimo.
This is a CHY news update. Hidden in the middle of Nanaimo's Rock City neighborhood is a wetland that a local community group fears could be affected by nearby development.
But I think the thing that I love the most about it is just like that, like, feeling that you get when you enter it. Like, you just have this, at least I do, have this feeling that it's special. Like, it just feels unique. Like, you don't have to be a biologist or a wetland ecologist or a specialist of any kind to come in and appreciate this place and feel that it's unique.
That was Tamara Brown, a local biologist and resident in the Rock City area, after hearing of a nearby development that could possibly affect the local ecosystem of the wetland. She teamed up with other residents and community members to try and conserve as much of the area as possible.
This is the marsh section of Rock City Wetland. Rock City Wetland, incidentally, is a working title because this wetland is so unknown. It doesn't even have a name. So I came up with Rock City Wetland because we needed some name to for trying to protect it.
Brown met with CHY at the wetland.
It's a beaver lodge. It's where our neighborhood beaver lives. We like to call them chubs. It's gender neutral. Because we don't know the sex of chubs. It's actually very difficult to sex a beaver.
Much of the wetland is private property. A public path and boardwalk were placed between the Rock City Road and Ocean Pearl Terrace by the City of Nanaimo in 2022.
There's owls and bats and frogs and salamanders and a huge array of diversity and species of plants in just a small area. Like, it takes, you know, less than 5 minutes to walk from one end of the trail to the other, probably, if you're walking quickly. I have two small children, so walking quickly is just not part of my reality.
Brown first discovered the wetland shortly after she moved to the area 6 years ago.
When you talk to people, they will say, oh, I had no idea it existed. Likely because the boardwalk wasn't here, except for maybe, you know, a few intrepid locals who might have bushwhacked into this place. The Snoqualmie and their Tsleil-Waututh ancestors used this place as well, so they would have known about it. But very few Nanaimoites know about this place yet. I'm spreading the word.
While exploring the wetland, Brown discovered the area to be home to one of the more rare types of wetland ecosystems, a fen.
Behind the marsh area right here, where you see hundreds of pine trees behind us, is the fen. Now, what's a fen? We often know peatlands as bogs. We are familiar with Burns Bog, Rivets Bog. Oh, there was a bullfrog that jumped over there. The Pine Bog Trail in Pacific Rim National Park. What we aren't familiar is the lesser known and more rare fen peatland type.
Similar to a bog, a fen is an organic wetland, or peatland, that is primarily made up of sludge and organic plant materials, allowing the fen to be groundwater fed. This is unlike a bog that is primarily fed by rainwater. Brown says fens are the rarest type of wetland ecosystem in the province.
Making it a very rare wetland in the coastal Douglas fir zone makes it one of the more rare ecosystems in Canada.
Knowing that much of the wetland is private property, Brown knew it would likely one day get developed, but she's concerned about the size of what is planned. A development permit has been approved for a six-story, 102-unit residential building at 3400 Barrington Road, right beside the wetland.
I could not believe the scale of the development that they had proposed. Like, I just never in my wildest years ever thought that someone would think that was a good idea.
As the development would require blasting the rocky ground, she worries it could affect the rare and sensitive ecosystem she says is just below the bluff.
I'll show you. It's pretty shocking how close it is to the wetland. It's just a 15-meter buffer, 7.5 from the smaller wetland over there, in fact. And it's shocking because of the scale of it. So it's a 1.5 hectare property, and the building almost takes up all of that.
Per City of Nanaimo zoning bylaws, developments must have a 15-meter buffer zone, or setback, from all wetland boundaries. Brown says she worries one of the water sources was left out of the bio-inventory assessment. The assessment of the development area and nearby wetland was done by a third party for the City of Nanaimo. Brown says this water source is an amphibian breeding habitat for the blue-listed species of concern, northern red-legged frog. She explains the importance of this factor.
So under the province's Develop with Care guidelines, amphibian breeding habitat needs a 30-meter setback for amphibian breeding species and possibly more. You typically 60 meters when it's breeding for endangered species such as the northern red-legged frog, Rana aurora.
She says the assessment did not demonstrate that the wetland is connected through surface water to the nearby Cottle Creek watershed and Cottle Lake, which are both fish-bearing with cutthroat trout. Brown worries the blasting for the development could affect the hydrology of the wetland, which could then lead to impacts on the Cottle Creek watershed.
So what I hope for is that the city recognizes that there were mistakes made and say, okay, mea culpa, we didn't know, let's go back and do it properly. That's what I'm asking for, is that when you take into consideration the sensitive ecosystem and the scope of work, what's at stake, due diligence is needed.
Brown says she's not anti-development, but wants to make sure all relevant information about the wetland ecosystem is understood and that proper precautions are taken. CHY reached out to the city of Nanaimo to ask about the potential missing ecological information in the bioinventory assessment. Jeremy Holm, City Director of Planning and Development, responded via email, saying the City of Nanaimo has a strong framework in place for water course protection. In the case of the development at 3400 Barrington Road, the framework also addresses wetland protection and stormwater management. He says the large wetland on the north side of the property has been, quote, protected by covenant since 1990, with a new covenant established as a condition of subdivision in 2022, end quote. In addition to the covenant, the large wetland is protected as a Schedule C water body in the zoning bylaw, which requires the 15-meter setback. While there is no provincial protections applied to the smaller seasonal wetland on the west side of the property, Holm says it is still protected under the covenant with a 7.5-meter leave strip. Holm says the bioinventory assessment evaluated a number of factors at the wetland for development plans for the property. Some of the factors are inventory and classification of aquatic and wildlife habitat values, significant environmental features, slope gradient and exposure, geologic features, and habitat protection. He says the qualified environmental professional who did the assessment, quote, concluded that no rare species were found, end quote. He also says, quote, the city of Nanaimo relies on information provided by qualified registered professionals to address relevant bylaws, regulations, and standards, end quote. And if any concerns about the work done by a registered professional, quote, a complaint can be made to the relevant association or college, end quote. Brown later told CHY she plans to file a complaint with the College of Applied Biologists, alleging the assessment has failed to, quote, adequately characterize the site's ecological and hydrological complexities, end quote. CHY will continue to follow this story. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Welcome back once again for Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is your host for the hour, Danny Nesvedarani, and we have reached almost the end of the hour. Before we get into any of that, another segment I wanted to do on this episode was talk about some upcoming art exhibitions that are going to be starting this week. First one is at the Polygon Gallery in North Vancouver in the Shipyards area. This one is simply titled Greg Girard, and it is sort of a retrospective, it seems, of acclaimed Canadian photographer Greg Girard receiving his first ever career survey. He is someone who's gained a lot of recognition working for media outlets while also developing independent projects focused on social and physical transformations of urban centers, especially within the continent of Asia. He's done a lot of traveling throughout his career, specifically spending a considerable amount of time in Hong Kong throughout the 80s and 1990s as well. And that is going to be coming up July 10th. It's going to be mostly photography based, which is the norm for the Polygon generally. But yeah, go check it out if you have the time. And the other one, this one is a bit of a farther commute for those listening, possibly, but this is at the Reach Gallery Museum in Abbotsford, BC, and it is simply titled Interglacial. It's a solo exhibition by Vancouver-based environmental artist Desiree Patterson, focused on the present as a critical moment in deep history, one in which the global climate crisis puts the future's well-being of our planet and all the living beings, its hosts, in the balance. Crucial to the regeneration of the planet, here the exhibition says that Ice ages are expansive cycles of geologic time in which ice proliferates over the surfaces of the Earth. In our present interglacial, a warmer period defined by the end of one ice age and the beginning of the next, we are faced with the haunting possibility that our planet may never experience another ice age. Desiree Patterson, who is the solo artist for this exhibition, is a Vancouver-based artist whose multidisciplinary practice is rooted deeply in the discipline of photography. And her aesthetic vision for this project, as well as a lot of her art, is closely tied to the province's mountainous and glacial landscapes. That is going to be coming up July 11th, so this Friday. And I believe I'll be attending that and speaking with Desiree as well as the gallery staff for a more in-depth piece on the exhibition. With that being said, we have reached the end of the hour for today's Speak Up. Make sure you tune in tomorrow for Intravenous with our public affairs and talk coordinator, Nicole Hines. For Intravenous tomorrow at 10 a.m., she will be speaking with Kelty Forsyth, or Forsyth, the director of the dark comedy Peerless, with the Ensemble Theater Festival, as well as Fiona Black, the artistic director of Vancouver's Folk Festival, and then another interview after that with Kagan Go, who is back in studio to chat about the Mad Pride Festival and his film Common Law. Make sure you tune in. That's going to be a lot of speaking up and a lot of amazing interviews right here at CJSF at 10 a.m. tomorrow. So, yeah, make sure you tune in tomorrow. Make sure you tune in for Speak Up as well on Thursday with our programming coordinator here at the station, Jesse Wensloff. And with that being said, I have nothing else to say other than thank you so much for tuning in this week. I'm going to leave you all with one last track before we go off into the land of Democracy Now with Amy Goodman. This one is from another local band by the name of Bloom Effect. This track is titled Second Sight. Hope you enjoy, and you'll hear from me next week.
waiting for our moments to break through.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective.